We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Chicago Bears select.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, presented by The Bear Report. Your number one source for everything Chicago Bears draft news, analysis, scouting reports, and more. Presented by Blue Wire Pods. And now, making their way to the podium, Andrew Freeman and Usaid Koshal.
All right, Bears fans, welcome into Picks for Polls, a Chicago Bears draft podcast presented by The Bear Report and Blue Wire Pods. My name, of course, is Andrew Freeman. I'm happy to be your co-host today. And, of course, happy to be joined by my other co-host here, Usaid Koshal, as we are following the Bears losing their first game of the 2022 season, recording here on a Wednesday, September 21st. And coming off that Bears loss to the Packers, unfortunately, 27-10, a game that kind of felt all too familiar for us Bears fans here. But you said, despite some of the lows of this last weekend, how are you doing today, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Obviously not an ideal scenario, just the fashion in which the Bears lost. But I'm ready to recap it. I'm ready to get into some playmakers that the Bears should be watching on the offensive side of the ball. And then our old friend Lovie Smith coming to town for, I think, the second or third time since he's been fired from the Bears about 10 years ago. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah, certainly a lot to talk about today, like you said. And a big focus, I think, on the offense, and rightly so, because I think when we're looking at this past game against the Packers here, if there is one storyline here, and we could focus on the defense, you know, the run defense wasn't great in this last game. You know, Roquan Smith, you know, it seems like he's knocking off the rust, or, you know, something's up with him because he did not play great in this last one. The defense as a whole, you know, we saw some splash plays from the pass rush, but the pass coverage wasn't good. You know, the two rookies, Gordon, Brisker, did not have very good games. Gordon in particular was, you know, targeted all game by Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Like, we could talk about some of that stuff, but I think the major storyline coming up from this game has to be the offense, because it's a common trend with the Bears here in this franchise. You know, this franchise is just allergic to good, you know, forward-thinking, innovative, modern offensive football, it seems. And, you know, we're only 2 weeks into the season here, and we don't want to make any, you know, broad conclusions too quickly, because a lot can change, a lot can develop over the course of the season. But it was just another one of those nights where the Bears offense, you know, start off strong with a opening drive, getting a touchdown on a Justin Fields, a little kind of fake bootleg play for him to go in for a score, to kind of get the game started there after the Packers went down for a score in their first drive. And you kind of started to think that, okay, maybe this could be a game here. You know, these two teams trading blows here early on. I think the Bears defense ended up getting a stop, I believe, in the very next possession. So, you know, you're thinking some positive thoughts for this team moving forward. And then, you know, after that, the offense just completely stalled for the entire first half. Basically, they couldn't get anything going in the passing game. The Packers were able to slow down their running game a little bit for the rest of the first half. And it became much of the same that we've seen over the past few years, really for a long while now for Bears fans, where the offense, you know, just couldn't get anything going. And then Aaron Rodgers eventually found a rhythm and started picking the defense apart in that first half, got them out to a big 24 to 7 lead at halftime. And from there, it was pretty much over. The Bears, you know, they did some stuff to make it a little bit of a competitive game in the second half. You know, they got the run game going with David Montgomery. David Montgomery was awesome in this game. And, you know, on the subject of looking forward to, you know, future guys in the 2023 drafts and playmakers, you know, running back is looking like a strong spot for this Bears team moving forward into next year, you know, assuming they keep a David Montgomery. So that's, I guess, one positive for this offense moving forward, because Montgomery looked pretty awesome in this game after a pretty, you know, pretty bad week one, or pretty underwhelming week one, you know, in the monsoon there. But man, the Bears couldn't get anything going in the passing game. Luke Getsy, I thought, called a really conservative game plan. I think he only called 18 or 19 passing plays the entire game, which is ridiculous when you're down by, you know, multiple scores for most of it. And Justin Fields only had 11 passing attempts, adding up to, when you combine the sacks and all that stuff into it, the Bears only having 48 net passing yards in the year of our Lord, in the year 2022. And we have the Bears out here only getting 48 passing yards, net passing yards. So it was a struggle to watch this offense. Once again, you say, what were your general thoughts on the game before we kind of dig into it a little bit more?
Well, I really thought it was a typical Bears-Packers showdown, right? You're talking about a team that kind of had a surprise win in week one, specifically because of the conditions. Not a lot of people even expected the Bears to win. And I also think that had Jimmy Garoppolo been starting for the 49ers instead of, you know, Trey Lance, who's basically a rookie quarterback this year but is now sidelined with the ankle injury, that it probably would have been a very different game. And plus, let's be honest, like, week one's a complete crapshoot. Like, we saw the Vikings beat the Packers, and then the Vikings just turned around the very next week and got absolutely destroyed by the Philadelphia Eagles. But ultimately, this was one of those games where it was a typical Bears-Packers showing, right? You're talking about a team that basically got blown out in week one by the Packers. They come back week two, and you know what? They were running like a well-oiled machine. Now, ultimately, I think you look at this and say that early on, you know, when the Bears had that 7-play, 71-yard drive down the field in 3 minutes and 56 seconds to score a touchdown on their first possession, at that point, you're like, okay, there's something brewing here. But then after that, it was just like punt after punt after punt. And early on, it had the makings of being a heavyweight fight. But unfortunately, this game showed me, and you as well, right? Because we're always on the same page about this team. Pretty much, like, it showed us one thing that a lot of people were not willing to acknowledge in the past. It's just the fact that this is an offense that does not really have the horses needed to compete with any of the big dogs in the NFC. You know, we saw a lot of people throughout the offseason talking about how this is a team that could surprise a lot of people, possibly sneak into the playoffs. You know what? Well, let's be honest about something. The Bears are far off from a playoff team. They are a team that is in contention probably for like a top five, top 10 draft pick. And it's simply because they don't have the horses or the playmakers around Justin Fields to really justify this team taking a step forward. And, you know, I wrote this in my kind of post-game article. I talked about how on the subject of David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert, like, those guys ran for 160 yards. The Bears were averaging 8.8 yards per rushing attempt, right? The point I'm making is that we've talked all offseason about how the Bears don't have an identity on offense. But I think what it comes down to at the end of the day, and this was so prevalent on Sunday, because every time David Montgomery was given the ball, he was making plays. The Bears have an identity on offense, which is the running game. It's just that the team refuses to fully commit to it. You know, the subject of 11 passes, like, play to your strengths and watch the rest of the offense begin to open up.
Well, see, I think this is where we may disagree a little bit here, Zay, because I think they are committing to the running game. And we look at this Bears offense as a whole in the past 2 weeks. I mean, first of all, week one is a little bit of an outlier in terms of, you know, you're literally playing, you know, in a monsoon. They're like, Lake Michigan basically transferred over from Lake Michigan to Soldier Field, basically, because of all the rain and stuff. Like, those were less than ideal conditions for an offense, let alone a passing game, to function. So they had to run the ball a lot in that game. But, you know, clearly their plan going into this game was to run the ball and run the ball a lot. And when you have the type of running splits like they did have, you know, despite the fact that they were losing for most of the game, you know, a lot of speculation goes into the fact that, you know, maybe they don't, trust Justin Fields in this passing game just yet, but I think it more so has to do with the fact that, like you said, they don't really have the horses right now to run a full-fledged, or at least according to the coaching staff right now, you know, really open up the passing game right now, which I think is a wrong assessment to make. Like, even though, yeah, they don't have the talent needed, they don't really have ideal talent, but, you know, there are still some pieces here to work with, which I think we'll be getting into shortly here, or at least, you know, some pieces that, you know, could be functional if they, you know, if they were able to kind of make them make it work a little bit with the chemistry of this offense. But, you know, I saw a site out there when you look at expected rushing attempts based or expected passing attempts based off of, you know, game situation, what down it is, how many yards to go on the first down, all that stuff. You know, the Bears lead the league far and away in terms of, you know, running the ball more than expected. I think they have, like, they're running the ball 23% more expected than passing the ball compared to the situation that they're in. And we look at the next closest teams. The next closest team is the San Francisco 49ers, a typically run-heavy team who is at about 14%. So you're literally talking about like a 10, 11% difference there, 9% difference between the next team. And then the next closest team after the 49ers is at 8%. So the Bears are a complete outlier right now in terms of their running the ball rate compared to, you know, what you typically expect for a team, given the situations that they've been in on offense so far this year. And again, some of that has to do with the week one, you know, the weather situation, some of that goes into, you know, what the game plan was in this past game where they did have a lot of success in the ground. So like you said, you know, why go away with it? But the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, we look at what's the purpose of this year. You know, you look at Ryan Poles throughout the offseason, you know, training away Khalil Mack, eating a bunch of dead money to move on from some veterans, you know, not really spending a ton in free agency, you know, kind of getting the cap sheet worked out to be more advantageous for this team going into next year to make some splashes in free agency, you know, with them having over $100 million in projected cap space. You know, what is this year all about? Well, I would say that this year, especially with the fact that they're starting a bunch of young guys all across the roster, this is a development year. This is about seeing what you have in the young guys and who's the one young guy in this roster that you need to get the most information out of in terms of knowing what he is moving forward. That's Justin Fields. You know, Justin Fields is the number one priority in terms of, you know, finding out what you can for him this season. It's not David Montgomery. He's going to be a free agent next year. You know, you don't need to find out what he is. We already know what he is. He's established. We know what he is. You know, whether you want to pay him or not, that's kind of the question you got to determine, I guess. But we know what David Montgomery is, but we don't know what Justin Fields is. And we need to see what he is moving forward. And you're not going to see what Justin Fields is by him only throwing the ball 11 times a game in a game where, you know, you should be throwing the ball a lot because you're losing the entire game. So why not try to open it up a little bit? And some of this goes to the play calling decisions, you know, a lot of second and long runs, a lot of, you know, basic play calls and first down, just basic runs and first down, not really throwing the ball in early downs. And what that means is that you're putting Justin Fields in a lot of disadvantageous positions on third and long where he has to throw the ball with the defense knowing he has to throw the ball, and you put yourself in troublesome situations with that. So that's probably my big spiel on the running game aspect of things, because, you know, it was apparent in this game they were trying to run the ball. And, you know, I think some of the players said it afterwards in the post game press conference that, you know, Getsy wanted to run the ball in this game, and it was pretty clear because, you know, they ran the ball, and to give them credit, they did run the ball pretty well in this one.
Yeah, like I said, the average 8.8 yards per carry, and I think it's really encouraging to see, because if we're going to be honest, you know, David Montgomery's been one of those players over the last couple of years who the Bears should have gotten way more out of, but they never really did because of porous offensive line play. Now, when I kind of look at things moving forward, you know, like the run game should obviously be a priority, because I think it's all about how you have two really good running backs in Herbert and Montgomery. You combine that with a dual threat quarterback like Justin Fields, and effectively, you know, you are going to keep defenses guessing at times. But I think the overall bigger story here is when you talk about what exactly the future includes, is that there are certain players on this roster, right? Like a Cody White here, for example, not really a guy that you're going to build for the future, or even a player like Robert Quinn. I mean, I think I saw somewhere, I believe it was on Over the Cap, if the numbers are correct, the Bears could move on from both next year, Quinn and white hair and save, I think it's something like $20 or $30 million in cap space, which again, you know, there's a lot of young players like a Jalen Johnson, Travis Gibson, Darnell Mooney that could be in line for extensions that the Bears could decide to hand them, you know, some deals to kind of make them part of the long-term future in Chicago. But in context of like who's stepped up over the first 2 weeks of the season, I would say, you know, one guy who sticks out for me is defensive end Travis Gibson. You're talking about a player that the previous regime drafted in the fifth round. He was labeled as incredibly raw, spent most of his rookie season inactive and kind of just on the sidelines, kind of took a step forward in 2021, had about six sacks as a sophomore. And then really this year he's popped off because the last two seasons he was playing as a 3-4 defensive end. This year though, Gibson's playing as a 4-3 defensive end, and essentially, you know, it's a position that he played while he was in college. So a lot of what the Bears are doing is just so similar. I mean, I saw a stat somewhere where he's right up there in terms of pressures. He's got 8, which is up there with a lot of the elite edge rushers in the NFL. So, you know, Travis Gibson's one name to continue watching. Sports betting continues to take over the sports world, and with fall right around the corner, there's going to be action from every major league sports league across the country on our own TVs. If you're like me, you're glued to the couch watching as many games as you can. Our friends at OddsTrader have got you covered with all the odds for each major sports book from around the web, all in one place just for you. As an added bonus, OddsTrader even compares the sign-up codes and promos so you get the best deal possible. When you're trying to find the best book, it's always best to have the best sign-up codes and promotions. Sometimes those even come with boosts, even additional money deposits. The app gives you a complete rundown on any game, including statistics, injuries, key game stats, game day weather, keeping you, the fan, as informed as possible. And sometimes if you're like us, you've got multiple bets going at once, OddsTrader will keep track of them all in one place for you. So what we want you guys to do is this. Head over to OddsTrader.com/BlueWire. Once again, that's OddsTrader.com/BlueWire, the number one website for all your game day bets.
Yeah, Gibson's been really good these first 2 weeks. And, you know, I watched him this past game, and you know, it's interesting because he's not out there a lot. He doesn't get a ton of snaps when he's out there, but when he is on the field, he's constantly making plays. He's constantly being disruptive. Now, some of that is, you know, he's kind of been getting some favorable matchups in terms of, you know, a lot of his pressures have been unblocked because teams like to do these rollouts, and they've rolled out to his side, and you know, he's not biting on those rollout fakes. Like, he's going after the quarterback. And, you know, he's disrupted some plays because of that. So that's, I mean, those are good things to see. You want to see a guy who's instinctive in space like that and is willing to make a play on those bootlegs, because that's such a big part of the NFL now. But Gibson, he had a really nice game against the Packers. You know, he was able to beat, you know, Elgin Jenkins, his first game back from his injury at right tackle for the Packers. You know, he's one of the, you know, one of the better young offensive linemen we have in the NFL today. Travis Gibson beat him multiple times in this game to get after Aaron Rodgers. He had multiple sacks in this game. He looked really good. Like, he looks legitimately like he's going to be, I think, a future Pro Bowler or All Pro or a future stud for this team. You know, not one of those true impact elite guys that, you know, you talk about. But I think he's a guy that you look at. He's got some stud attributes to him. I think he can be a building block for this defense moving forward, maybe as not the guy moving forward, but certainly a guy that you can build as part of your defensive line rotation as a key guy. And, you know, he can do some things for you as a pass rusher. I like what they're doing with him. Him and Dominique Robson, who we have to mention as well, he stepped up in his first two games. I think he had a fumble recovery in this game as well, if my memory serves me correctly, on kind of a broken play from the Packers. But, you know, one of the things that I like to see with them is being creative with those two guys, you know, putting one of those guys inside a little bit. I mean, there was one play where Travis Gibson was lined up inside on a pass rushing snap. Him and Dominique Robinson were on the same side. Gibson's on the inside, Robinson's on the outside. They run a stunt. That freed up Robinson to get after Aaron Rodgers, leading to a Robert Quinn sack. So those are some of the things you like to see. So I like to see that. So Gibson, Robinson, those two for me up front. I feel good about those two young players moving forward on the edge. And it makes me feel a lot safer moving on from a guy like Robert Quinn right now, because those are two guys I want to see get more reps. And honestly, you know, they're playing Al-Khadim Muhammad a lot of snaps, and I don't know how many, I don't know how long I can stomach watching Al-Khadim Muhammad get more snaps than Travis Gibson and Dominique Robinson. Like, those two have absolutely flashed over the first 2 weeks. And again, we talk about this being a development year. I think for this coaching staff moving forward, you have to get those guys more snaps than Muhammad moving forward if you're not going to move Quinn, because, you know, Muhammad's not a long-term piece here. Gibson and Robinson definitely have the potential to be, though. For me, I look at the secondary here. You know, Jalen Johnson's had a really nice start to the year. You know, I believe he hasn't been targeted yet, or if he has, he's only been targeted like once or twice this year. Like, clearly, you know, teams are going after other guys in the secondary to pick apart. We look at Kyler Gordon getting picked apart a little bit. They're targeting Brisker a little bit. Some of these other corners that they're targeting, Fildor, obviously. So they're going after other guys here. They're not going after Jalen Johnson. So some of that is, you know, wanting to take advantage of some of these younger defensive backs on this roster that aren't as good as Jalen Johnson. But also, you know, teams clearly have a respect for Jalen Johnson as a presence at that other cornerback spot on the right side. And, you know, he's had a good start to the year. He had that forced fumble in week one that really, really helped change the outcome of that game, because if the 49ers go and score a touchdown there early in that one, that really changes the entire outlook of that game. And Jalen Johnson with that forced fumble really set the tone for what that day was going to be, as kind of a sloppy affair. So Johnson, you know, he's been good. He's looked solid on tape when you look at him in coverage, even though he's not really active because they're not really throwing to him. But I think Johnson, look at him, he's another guy in defense that I feel confident that's going to be a long-term piece for this team moving forward.
Yeah, Jalen Johnson's one who is, like you said, kind of a name to keep an eye on. Dominique Robinson is another phenomenal name. And then that, you know, I think right now might actually be leading the Bears in sacks with 1.5 total sacks. But, you know, another player that I think is really worth mentioning, and this is a guy who, you know, kind of arrived in Chicago as a free agent during the offseason, still relatively young in his career. I think he's in his fifth or sixth season at this point, but that's wide receiver Equanimeous St. Brown. Now, I understand he was with the Packers the first 3 or 4 years of his career, kind of dealt with a lot of injuries, but he's developed a nice chemistry with Justin Fields. And quite frankly, like, let's be honest, he is the red zone target that if this team starts getting into the red zone, you could see Fields target Equanimeous St. Brown more. Ultimately, you look at it, and like we've mentioned multiple times, like, the Bears don't necessarily have any top-tier playmakers at the wide receiver position. You look at a guy like Byron Pringle, who they gambled on in free agency. Well, I mean, Pringle really has not impressed at all much this year, but St. Brown's one of those guys because of his familiarity with Luke Getsy, the chemistry he's developed with Justin Fields. I mean, I would not be surprised to see him sign a 2 or 3 year deal in Chicago during the 2023 offseason to kind of allow him to be one of the faces of the Bears playmaking core moving forward. I mean, I just think that ultimately you look at the state of this offense, right? And there are multiple ways to go about it, right? You could focus on what the Bears have right now, and then you could also look at what the Bears can eventually develop into in the future. And I think it's more so about the future, because if we're being completely transparent, this, a lot of what this offense is going to look like in 2 to 3 years is not necessarily on the roster yet, right? You're looking at, obviously, Justin Fields. You are looking at Darnell Mooney as being a long-term building block. Like, those are your top two guys right now. But then you look at a first round pick coming up in the 2023 draft. We could look into adding a playmaker there. You're not, as a new regime, I think, fully sold on guys like Tevin Jenkins and Larry Borm. I still think that both of them have to prove their worth, especially being on those cheap rookie deals. The Bears could decide to cut bait with them if need be, or even possibly flip them for some sort of trades. Braxton Jones is a name that, you know, has been up and down so far and just has really yet to find consistency. And we're being fully honest, like, the fan base fell in love with Braxton Jones this offseason. I was impressed with what I saw with Braxton Jones, but also if he continues to consistently be an inconsistent player, then guess what? Next offseason, it is warranted if you look into upgrading at left tackle, because if we're going to be fully honest, like, this team has not had a franchise caliber left tackle in forever. And for the Bears, you know, if you have an opportunity to upgrade there, whether it's signing someone in free agency, which is unlikely because of the way the left tackle market's gone, or even drafting and developing a player, you take it by all means. And, you know, I should also mention, it's like you look at Eberflus and Poles' previous teams, the Chiefs and Colts, and both of them drafted offensive linemen relatively high. Like when Eberflus was with the Colts, they drafted, you know, Quentin Nelson in the first round, who I think was the fifth overall pick that year. So lose a top 10 pick to my knowledge. But the point is, it's like when Poles was also in Kansas City, they drafted Eric Fisher first overall. And that's when Poles was kind of at the bottom of the ladder in terms of the work he was doing. So the point is that it's like, a lot of this offense and what this offense is going to develop into in terms of talent, it's not necessarily fully on the roster, but there's still a lot of upgrades to be made. So I think no one's safe.
Yeah, no one's safe. And, you know, currently I look at this offense. I mean, you bring up Equanimeous St. Brown. Like, I think he has had some nice moments here. I'm not sure how sustainable that is towards him being a long-term piece, though, because you know, you look at his touchdown against the 49ers, like that's just more of an example of Getsy scheming him open. And kind of the same thing against, you know, the Packers on that flea flicker play, which is a big play, made a nice play after the catch. But I'm still not sold on Equanimeous St. Brown. I know he has a relationship with Getsy, but there's a reason why he was brought in on a vet minimum contract. Like, you know, he's not really seen as anything much around the league. It certainly wasn't seen as much by the Packers, where they were willing to let him go, despite the fact that their receiving core wasn't very good. So it's a wait and see for me with the Equanimeous St. Brown, but I've been, you know, a little bit impressed with what he's been able to do and his opportunities so far. You know, one player that has disappointed me at wide receiver though has been Darnell Mooney, the start of the year. And I think he only has what, like two catches to start the season. Like he hasn't been a part of the game plan so far. And that's really disappointing because, you know, going into the season, I thought Darnell Mooney would be kind of playing that, you know, not like being Davante Adams as because Davante Adams, but kind of playing that Davante Adams role in this offense where he's going to be getting the bulk share of targets in this offense. They're going to move him around all over the place. And, you know, he's going to be the guy that Justin Fields is looking for on any given play to get the ball to in third downs. And, you know, whenever they need a big drive on offense in the passing game to get him the ball. And that hasn't come up whatsoever. Like Darnell Mooney has been a complete no-show in this offense. I think both of his catches have been screens that, you know, one of them worked against the 49ers, but this last one against Green Bay, they sniffed it out and they did not work in that one. So, you know, Darnell Mooney, you know, I still believe he's a long-term piece. You know, I feel good about him, but I think we're starting to see that, you know, some of my concerns going into this year, you know, a lot of Bears fans were hyping up Darnell Mooney as this number one type of wide receiver, this alpha type of guy that you can build a wide receiver core around. And, you know, me and a lot of other people like on base tour, we're like, I mean, we like Darnell Mooney. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Darnell Mooney. I love what he brings. But, you know, this whole talk about him being a number one is a little bit premature because there's, you know, it's one thing to be that number two option and to soak up targets, you know, when Allen Robinson does go down to step up and get a lot of targets. But it's another thing to be the, you know, entire linchpin of an entire offense in the passing game to build around at that wide receiver spot where defenses now are focusing on you and, you know, trying to scheme around you, so to speak, because, you know, the Bears don't have any other options that you're worried about. So, you know, for Darnell Mooney, it's kind of that adjustment where now he's the undisputed number one guy. And so far, you know, he's learning that being the number one guy isn't as easy as it can be, as it can seem sometimes. And just because you're getting a lot of production as number one guy last year doesn't mean it's going to translate now that you are the full-time number one guy. So it's kind of been, you know, I wouldn't say I like that this is how it's played out, but it's played out kind of the way I thought in terms of the fact that, you know, Darnell Mooney, you know, he's a really good player. I think he's a long-term piece. He fits nicely with Fields. And I mean, we've yet to see it this year, but those two clearly have a nice chemistry together based off of what we saw last year. But I think moving forward, you can't go into next year assuming that he's your number one guy moving forward. You have to – I think he's a guy that you can build around – that you can keep as part of your core moving forward, but he's not a guy that I'm building my receiver core around, so to speak. Like, I think the Bears should be aggressive to try to upgrade that position and get a true number one guy. I don't know who's going to be available because the free agency pool isn't really great. We can talk about some draft options coming up soon, but you know, the wide receiver position, you know, once again, it's going to be a position of need going forward into next year. You know, you touched on Byron Pringle. You know, Byron Pringle is what he is. Like, he was, you know, he was a fourth option in Kansas City for a long time. He was a special teamer guy. He got opportunities last year, but again, it's easy to look good when you're playing as a Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce all the times, and with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. So, you know, completely different situation. He was asked to be number two, and he hasn't really shown anything. And, you know, Velus Jones, will see, you know, hopefully he gets back from his hamstring. But the one thing I want to talk about here before we kind of talk about the offensive line a little bit more, we need to have a conversation about Cole Kmet, because what is Cole Kmet? Like, you know, obviously I've never been very high on him, but this last game was not a very good showcase for Cole Kmet. Obviously his blocking wasn't very good in this one. He had that one block in the Darnell Mooney screen where he just missed his guy. And again, I don't think he's been a great blocker anyway throughout his first couple of years in the NFL. And then, you know, my concerns about him as a receiver have played out so far. He didn't do anything in the 49ers game. That wasn't really his fault, but you know, he had some opportunities in this Packers game, and he had that one really bad drop on that one play and was a no-show besides that. So Cole Kmet, like, you know, what are your thoughts? Do you think he's done anything to prove himself as a long-term piece, or do you think that the Bears, you know, should be looking to try and upgrade if he doesn't really step it up here over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I don't think he's really done anything to prove that he's a long-term piece. And again, here's why. Because let me take a step back for self. When I rank outside of the quarterback, right, the three most experienced playmakers on this offense, you've got David Montgomery, and you've got Cole Kmet and Darnell Mooney, right? Now, at least with Montgomery and Mooney, you've seen enough throughout the last couple seasons to say, you know what, these are guys that any new regime around the NFL would welcome, okay? I mean, especially Mooney, who had, you know, just under 1,100 yards receiving last year. Montgomery, another really phenomenal running back, by the way, who I think has lost out on production because of a bad offensive line over the last couple of years. But then there's Cole Kmet. And Cole is, I understand he's like a hometown hero, who's a hometown favorite, but Cole's incredibly polarizing, specifically because when I look at him as a player, right, it's like there's these limitations that pop up, and the same limitations that you and I were talking about 2 years ago when he was drafted and throughout his rookie season and last year, those same limitations we're still talking about. And then it brings up an even bigger question in terms of what has Cole Kmet done to warrant kind of being on this roster long term? Because there's one thing, right? He's not the greatest athlete in the world. He's kind of limited as a route runner. There's only so many different types of routes that he can run. And then he really lacks breakaway speed, right? And then there are times where I think you could certainly consider his hands to be incredibly questionable as well, right? So with Cole, I think what it comes down to is he hasn't done much to prove himself, and that he's going to be one of those players that next offseason, the Bears need to look into getting a upgrade at tight end. Because when we look at this offense, right, and you know, this is Luke Getsy's offense, right? It's Luke Getsy and it's Justin Fields' offense. But when we look at like what the Rams did with their tight ends and the kind of Packers did with their tight ends, a guy like a Robert Tonyan, a Gerald Everett, you know, those are all guys who are kind of receiving tight ends first. And a big thing with them is they're able to consistently get involved in that downfield passing game, you know, on any sort of route. With Cole, it's kind of tough because the only like downfield route that he could run tends to be a fade down the seam, right? So that does kind of present mismatches. But then again, the thing with Cole is he doesn't necessarily have the speed to warrant outrunning a safety every single time.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the limitations out there. This past Sunday, like he's not the most explosive receiving threat right now. He hasn't really been in his entire career so far. So, you know, it's one of those things where Cole Kmet, you know, for me as someone who's not really never been sold on him, he's got a long ways to go to prove himself this year. But if he can prove himself over these next few games and improve, like there should be better opportunities for this passing game to work against teams like, you know, the Texans coming up, the Giants coming up, you know, the Bears should be able to have more of a passing offense in that one, you know, because the 49ers and Packers, those are two of the best secondaries, two best defenses in the NFL. So, you know, it's going to be a little bit tougher there. But, you know, hopefully we can see a little bit more of an expansion of this passing game moving forward, because it makes things tough to evaluate a guy like Justin Fields, who I know we're not going to touch on Justin Fields much in this episode, just because, one, we don't have the time, and two, like, that's just a whole Twitter firestorm I don't want to get into right now in terms of the Justin Fields conversation, because there's a lot of talk of, you know, is he a bust? Is, you know, is he the Bears guy moving forward? You know, are these just, you know, some, you know, the fact that, you know, development isn't linear, and, you know, there are going to be some valleys before we get to see him, you know, start to really improve going forward. Like, I don't want to get into that too much right now. I will, the one area I do want to touch on here before we move on to some college playmakers, you know, to talk about here is the offensive line and how we think that's going. You kind of touched on it. Like, I don't think Cody Whitehair is a long-term piece of this offense moving forward. I kind of talk about how Lucas Patrick, I don't really see him as a long-term piece. I think he's going to be here next year, but I don't think he's a guy that you're necessarily counting on as a long-term building block. But you kind of said it earlier, like, Larry Borum, like, he's been better than I expected so far this year, but he's definitely not someone that I'm really tied to moving forward. I think he's better off as a team swing tackle than as a full-time starter. You know, Braxton Jones, we'll see. I think he's, for a fifth-round pick as a rookie, like, he's looked good from that perspective. Has he been good from a, you know, National Football League perspective, or looking at all NFL tackles? Like, no. Like, that's going to happen, though, for young tackles. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to take him a while. We'll see how he develops throughout the year. But I will say I have been pretty impressed by Tevin Jenkins at right guard. I really cannot stand the rotation they have going for him right now with Lucas Patrick. Like, I think they just keep Jenkins starting right guard full-time because the rotation makes no sense to me. Jenkins, he's looked really good in the run game. Like, that was his calling card in college. Like, this guy is a mauler as a run blocker, and that showed so far right guard. That's really been something that's been elevated by switching to right guard as opposed to playing tackle. So I think Jenkins, he's going to work it out. I think he's going to be a long-term piece moving forward. Like, there's just too much talent there. And I like what I've seen from him so far. He's got to work on his pass pro, but that'll get better with more reps. Like, he's barely had any reps so far. So yeah, I like Jenkins. I like what I've seen. So offensive line, there's still some holes that are moving forward. They're going to have to upgrade it in the off season, but you know, hopefully that's something they can address both in free agency and in the draft. Like we said before, like, this is an offensive line, you know, run machine with Ryan Poles being a former offensive lineman. So, you know, that'll be something that's going to definitely be emphasized moving forward, I believe. So moving on here, you know, we talked about some of the playmakers not being ideal. For a little section here, let's talk about some playmakers in college football that, you know, the Bears could possibly be looking to target here at the top of the draft, whether it be in the first round or in the second round, some guys that have stood out throughout the course of this year. And I think the guy for me that's really stepped up, like, I know Jackson Smith, the Jimba, has kind of been the big name out of Ohio State that a lot of people had their eyes on because, you know, he is an Ohio State guy. I don't know if he played with Justin Fields in his last year. I don't think he did, but, you know, both being Ohio State guys, it makes a lot of sense to kind of pair those guys up at the top of next year's draft. But one other player that I've really liked to watch so far has been Jordan Addison, who, you know, had a big year last year at Pittsburgh to help Kenny Pickett and his rise into being a first-round pick. He had nearly 1,600 yards and 100 receptions last year, 17 touchdowns, like a huge receiving season at Pittsburgh. Transferred to USC to play with Lincoln Riley, and Jordan Addison's been awesome this year. I think he's definitely earned, you know, a spot as a first round pick going into next year's draft. You know, what have your thoughts been on him going into this season so far in the first few weeks of the college football season? And are there any other wide receivers that have stood out for you so far this year that you're kind of keeping an eye on for the Bears?
Yeah, I would say, you know, like, you look at the wide receiver class, and had you asked me a month ago, I would have told you there's three names. There's Jackson Smith-Njigba from Ohio State, Kayshon Boutte from LSU, and then Jordan Addison, who, again, is now at USC playing with Caleb Williams. But the reality of it is you look at it, and Smith-Njigba kind of left that week one game with an injury against Notre Dame. Didn't, I think, return. I'm not even sure if he's fully back into action. So that's something that could hurt his draft stock. Kayshon Boutte decided to transfer from LSU to I don't even know where at this point. I just think he's so done with anything and everything in terms of having to deal with Brian Kelly. So that really leaves Addison as being the top name at the wide receiver position, right? Now, he's a player that I look at about 6 feet tall, 174 pounds, you know what? So not the biggest guy, but I think he certainly could afford to add some strength. But what I love about him is just the simple fact that it's this explosive big playability, right? You saw kind of what he did at Pittsburgh. Really popped off. I think that this year, you know what, he had a really good game against Stanford with about 180 yards as well as two touchdowns. And you just look at what he was able to go ahead and do against a team like, you know, Rice, for example. It wasn't necessarily his best game by any means, but then again, like, you saw the ability to kind of go ahead and move him around, you know. So he's a player that I think really brings a lot of agility, quickness to the game. He's a player that I think can be an asset on all three levels. So Jordan Addison's definitely right now my wide receiver one, but it's also tough, right? Because, like, for me, I mentioned earlier how I felt as if there was an opportunity to upgrade at left tackle. If Braxton Jones continues to struggle, the Bears should certainly go for it. And so now it kind of brings up this other question when you talk about building around the playmakers. It's like, if you don't go wide receiver first, you decide to address another position first. Like, what do you do in the second or third round? Because there could be a quality tight end there. And there's going to be a handful in this draft class that you could look into possibly bringing in.
Yeah, and speaking of tight ends, I think, like, the major guys that stand out, if the Bears were to, you know, move on from a guy like Cole Kmet, Brock Bowers is a guy that really stands out to me. Like, Brock Bowers has been, you know, he's an awesome player. He's just one of those rare athletes at the tight end position where, again, he doesn't really have quite the size of a prototypical inline tight end, but his ability as a receiver is really special to see. Like, he's got incredible speed, explosiveness, and ball skills for the position. He's got good, you know, quick twitch ability for a tight end. That makes sense. Like, he's got good agility to run routes and, you know, shake guys a little bit in his routes. So all that stuff is just really special stuff for a tight end. You don't really see that very often. So, you know, the one thing for me is, like, what would his role be in the Bears offense? Because clearly, like, you know, Getsy coming over from the Packers, he wants to run that Packers offense where it's, you know, they want to run the ball a lot. They want to have a lot of tight ends in the field, a lot of tight ends that can block. I think Bowers would be perfect in kind of that Robert Tonyan role where he's not asked to block too much in line. He's more of a, you know, I wouldn't say like a true, like, slot, big slot wide receiver, but, you know, they move him around the formation a lot. You know, he's not relied upon in the run game a ton as a blocker, but if you can get him on the move a little bit in the screen game as a blocker and as a lead blocker, you know, he can be effective there out in space. And I think that's kind of some of the things that the Bears are going to be looking for in a lot of these tight ends, because I think they can find guys to be that, you know, kind of inline blocker type of guy, like the Mercedes Lewis role for the Packers. Like, I think you can find those guys. You can't find a guy, though, like Bowers with his receiving ability. And again, he doesn't need to be a great inline blocker. He just needs to be good enough. But if he can be a solid blocker on the move and in space for you while being an elite receiving threat, that just helps out your passing game so much. But some other tight ends, I mean, another Notre Dame tight end here, Michael Mayer. You know, he's another guy. He's going to be at the top of the list for tight ends on this draft class. He's kind of a not a player. He has more of the prototypical size for a tight end, but they do use him, you know, as a receiver quite a bit. I know in 2020, he actually ran like a lot of his routes from, you know, basically just playing like a wide receiver, basically. So he's one of those guys that has the flexibility to, you know, he's not a great blocker right now, but to be in line and be a receiver a little bit. So he's a guy that you look at the top of this draft as well. And yeah, I mean, there are some talented tight ends in this class. Who are some guys that stand out for you?
Yeah, so you mentioned another Notre Dame tight end. I think it's worthy mentioning a couple UGA tight ends, but one guy in particular that sticks out to me is actually, I hope I'm saying this name correctly, but it's Arik Gilbert from, you know, University of Georgia, about 6'5", 260. So he's kind of got this major, like, frame that defenses are going to have to account for in the middle of the field. But what I love about him, I think that he's just a phenomenal athlete. And then everything about tight end feeds into, you know, him being able to just have a natural fear for the position and operate smooth as silk. You look at Gilbert, right? Like I said, really good athleticism. And then he's just improved over the last couple of years. You know, used to be really raw in terms of route running, but has really refined that. I think that he's a player that is impactful on all three levels of the passing games. That's short, intermediate, as well as deep. So when you look at Gilbert overall, right, you're talking about size, speed, length, agility, being a phenomenal route runner. I think that he's just this overall, this complete and just well-rounded tight end that I think can take another step forward and get even better when he gets to the next level. So ultimately, you know, Arik Gilbert's one of those names that you look at and you're like, hey, you know what? It would not be bad for Justin Fields to have a dynamic playmaker in the middle of the field at the tight end position. Because with Gilbert, you can line him up on the line of scrimmage. You can line him up as a blocker, both as a receiver. You can move him around, put him in the slot. And quite frankly, like, if we're being honest, when I look at Justin's career at Ohio State, right, and I look at Justin's first year and a half in the NFL so far, I mean, he's always had good wide receivers, good dynamic wide receivers like a Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney. But he's never really had kind of that top tier tight end, that target in the middle who can take on linebackers and take on safeties and present a mismatch on every single play. And I think a player like a Michael Mayer or even Arik Gilbert offers that from day one.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, certainly they need to figure out that receiving tight end position because it's an important part of any offense, but especially the Packers style of offense, that Shanahan style of offense where it's a lot of 12 personnel. You want to get big guys on the field, a lot of tight ends on the field. Like, you need guys with very versatile skill sets that can make that work. Now, if they did want to go to more of a traditional tight end, there's another guy at Georgia that we could talk about, Darnell Washington. You talk about a guy being rocked up, but this guy's like rocked up. You know, we talked about him a little bit on this podcast before, but he's more of that classic blocking inline tight end. You know, he's a good athlete in space, like in the straight line. Not the quickest dude, not going to run great routes, but if you're looking for more of that blocker guy, like Darnell Washington is definitely the way to go. So those are some names that we're keeping an eye on here in the early going of the season. Again, it's early in college football. We're going to be getting more into breaking down some prospects as the year goes on. But, you know, those are some of the big names to look forward to. And, again, it comes down to this Bears offense. You know, again, we said at the beginning of this podcast, like the talent level isn't there right now. We're seeing that in the passing game. It's just something that has to improve moving forward because you cannot win games in the modern NFL only dropping back, you know, 20 times or less. Like they're going to have to start throwing the ball and, you know, really unleashing what Justin Fields can do. And Justin Fields has to play better as well to be part of that. But yeah, we can't see too many games like we saw on Sunday. And a lot of that goes to, you know, having the playmakers that can make it work for this offense. So I think that's enough talk about, you know, this last week, you know, with this Packers game. And, you know, let's get rid of that stank right there because all you can do right now is move on to the next week. And speaking of moving on to the next week, we have an old friend coming back here for the Bears in their next upcoming game as Lovie Smith, the head coach of the Houston Texans, is returning to Soldier Field as the head coach of the Texans. Like I said, looking to get some revenge here against the Bears, maybe. I don't know, but there are some interesting storylines for this game. You said, what are some of the things that you're looking forward to for this upcoming Texans game here on Sunday?
Well, there's a lot of different storylines to watch, right? But the main thing that I'm going to be focusing on, and I know I'm going to sound repetitive when saying this. I know everyone's going to sound repetitive when saying this, but ultimately, right, just how exactly is this Bears offense going to go ahead and do? Now, this Texans game comes at the perfect time if we're looking at the Bears offense, right? The reason I say that is because week one, you know, it was a slow start. The offense eventually got it together. Week two, it was a fast start building off of the second half in week one, but then completely just collapsed, right, the rest of the game. Now you enter week three, and you know what this offense looks like when it does good. You know what the offense looks like when it struggles. So it's a building opportunity against a young team. And this is one of those games where the offense needs to come out and have a big showing just to be able to go ahead and build that confidence. Because if you're looking at the schedule right now, it's like you got the Giants afterwards, right, in week four. Then in week six, you've got the Washington Commanders coming to town. I believe somewhere in there, the Bears are playing in Minnesota week five, which is, I believe, October 9th. So ultimately, with that, right, the point is, it's like you're entering a stretch here. You're playing, you know, one decent team in the Vikings, but then the rest of them are just kind of mediocre teams. So it's an opportunity for this offense to really build and gain some confidence. And I think that starts this Sunday against a Texans defense that is just undergoing such a massive transition right now and is doing more identity figuring out than the Bears are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this Texans team right here. They start off the year 0-1-1. They had that tie week one against the Indianapolis Colts 20-20 and, you know, kind of a sloppy game, so to speak, but they end up losing to the Broncos this past week in another close game, 16-9. And, you know, they're a very similar team to the Bears in terms of, you know, Lovie Smith is kind of an old school head coach. They're going to play hard for him. He's defensive minded. Obviously they have that, you know, cover two, Tampa two style of defense that they're running, very similar to Eberflus, what he's doing. And, you know, they're going to scrap, they're going to play hard, they're going to hustle. They have a lot of young guys and some veterans there that are kind of helping to steer the ship of that rebuild there as they kind of set their foundation. I mean, these are two teams that are young and trying to set a foundation going forward. So, and they both play a very similar style of football. So that's kind of the one thing I'm interested in seeing is how that works in terms of, you know, like you said, Justin Fields, like this is a very similar defense to what he has played in practice basically every day. So is he going to have that familiarity there to be able to, you know, kind of go up against these guys and, you know, have a big game? Like, I hope so, because this defense, you know, certainly isn't the most talented. It's definitely not as talented as what we saw against Green Bay and against the 49ers, but there are some guys on this group that, you know, the Bears should look out for, like Jonathan Greenard. He had a nice year for the Texans last year. I think he's a solid young pass rusher. Jerry Hughes, he's been a nice veteran for a long time. Malik Collins is a nice three tech for that defense. And on the back end here, you got two rookies that are very similar to the Bears, having a cornerback and a safety that they're kind of hoping to develop in their defense. Like the Texans, they got Derek Stingley and Jalen Petre as two, you know, young up and coming rookies in the back end of their defense. So a lot of similarities there for these two teams. Like, I think the Bears probably have a little more talent on their defense, but, you know, it's pretty close. Texans to have some guys to kind of worry about there that, you know, if, you know, this team isn't careful, they could make some plays in this game, but it should be a much easier defense to go up against compared to the Packers and the 49ers who have, you know, Pro Bowl level guys at all levels of the defense. That's not the case here for the Texans. Like, it's a huge drop off in level of talent that you're going up against. And a much simpler, I think a very simple defense to kind of go up against too, because, you know, Lovie Smith, like, there's not a ton of, from what I've seen, there's not a ton of innovation from what he's done with this Tampa 2 defense. You know, it's still, again, it's a lot of cover 2. They're not really doing a ton of match coverages. You know, it really is kind of like a throwback in terms of what we've seen from defenses in the past. So I'm curious to see how Justin Fields does in that environment there. Now, defensively for this Bears team, they're going up against a Davis Mills run passing attack here. And, you know, the Texans have some receivers to worry about. You know, Brandon Cooks, Nico Collins, like both those guys are pretty solid. You know, on the offensive line, you know, Laremy Tunsil is going to be a tough matchup for Robert Quinn, some of these pass rushers at left tackle. But, you know, the rest of this offensive line isn't anything that, you know, I think the Bears pass rush should be able to have a pretty decent day. This offensive line for the Texans isn't great. For me, the key on that side of the ball there is, you know, stopping the run, because Dameon Pierce, you know, he had a really big, you know, preseason for the Texans. And I think we're still waiting to see when his breakout comes, because Pierce, I think he has a lot of natural talent at that running back spot. The Texans have talked about getting him involved in the run game more often, and the Bears' run defense has not been good so far this year. So I'm curious to see whether they can stop the run there, because, you know, this is going to be one of those, you know, low-scoring, scrappy games, I feel like. And I think, you know, stopping Dameon Pierce in that rushing attack is going to be huge for this Bears defense in this one. So before we wrap it up here, you said, let's get into our predictions. Who's your X factor for this one? Who do you think wins, and what do you think the score is going to be?
Yeah, so my X factor once again is going to be Justin Fields, right? You mentioned some of the kind of young dynamic defensive backs that are in the Texans secondary and Petrie, as well as Derek Stingley Jr. So my challenge to Justin Fields this week is can he overcome that slow start, and can he really get this Bears passing attack humming in the right direction? I think that the final score is going to be Bears end up winning 24-17. I think that it's going to be this ugly kind of dogfight, specifically because, like, this is a game where the Bears could run away with, but you know that the defense is also still a work in progress. So the Texans are going to find a way to punch the ball in the end zone once or twice. But ultimately, I think the Bears prevail, specifically because of just better coaching and the offense figuring it out.
Yeah, I have the Bears winning this one as well. This is the first time I have the Bears winning a game this year, by the way. So I have the Bears winning 20-16, kind of similar to you. Like, I think it's going to be kind of an ugly slop fest. There's going to be some sloppy plays. There's going to be some turnovers here. You know, two young teams trying to find their foothold here. Two rebuilding teams trying to, you know, find their way and set an identity for their franchises here. My X factor is not a player. It's actually a coach, and that's Luke Getsy. I think he's the X factor in this one. You know, I've not been impressed with Luke Getsy, the play caller or the offensive coordinator so far over these first two games. Like, it's a very small sample size. I'll give him that. So I'm not trying to crush him early on, but I'm not a big fan of their game plan in terms of, you know, running the ball as much as they do on early downs. You know, I think Getsy's done a poor job of, you know, putting Fields in positions to, you know, just make things a little bit easier for him early in games. You know, give him some layups on, you know, first and second down so that he doesn't have to be in these third and long situations all the time to try and dig himself out of a hole. I think it's a big part of why just Fields has struggled to start the year, is that they're not doing enough to kind of, you know, get him in a rhythm. I mean, just look at what the Green Bay Packers did with Aaron Rodgers this past week against the Bears. You know, it was a lot of easy stuff that they did, a lot of layups basically early in the game to kind of get him going, get the offense on schedule, get him in a little bit of rhythm. And then as the game went along, we saw Aaron Rodgers start to step up a little bit more and make, you know, more aggressive plays down the field. And that's what I want to see from this Bears offense. Get Justin Fields in a little bit of rhythm. Stop this game script of running on first and second down all the time, especially the second and long runs. Like, if they do another second and long run, like, I might throw something at my TV set, because it's just so frustrating to watch them fall for the same mistake every single time. Because it's just, I don't want to go on a huge tangent on that, but second and long runs are not good. Like, stop doing those. Like, they rarely work. So all it does is put you in third and long situations. So that's something I want to see them completely just remove from the playbook. But yeah, just open it up a little bit in the passing game, you know, see what Justin Fields can do, because at the end of the day, you know, Justin Fields this year is about seeing what he can do, see what he can offer to this Bears team forward. And you can't see that by seeing him hand the ball off every single play. So let's stop protecting the young quarterback. Let's let him throw the ball a little bit. Let's, you know, loosen up the playbook, loosen up the reins, and let this guy play the position that he's meant to play here. So I want to say big game for Justin Fields, and that starts with the game plan from Luke Getsy and hopefully calling a better game plan in terms of the game script and, you know, getting the passing game going a little bit to where it's not so run heavy and one dimensional. So those are our thoughts for this podcast. I think it's a good place to wrap it up for us today. For all of our listeners out there, make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe to the Bear Report on Blue Wire Pods and all of our podcasting platforms. Make sure to follow us on social media as well. We have our Twitter account, at Picks for Polls on Twitter. Make sure to follow us on College Football Saturdays as well as just for any draft content as well throughout the year. You say, where can our listeners find you on social media and find your work?
Yeah, you guys can follow me on social media at Usaid Kosheel. That's Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Check out my work on the Bear Report. I drop a post-game article every single week, the night of the Bears game. I drop a NFC North recap on Monday or Tuesday every week during the season. And then I've got an article out on Thursday or Friday about something looking forward to the following week. So a lot of content on my end and then this podcast as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure to give Usaid a follow. Make sure to check out his work at the Bear Report. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at AJFreeman25. You can find my work on the Bear Report as well. By the time this podcast comes out, I should have the next article in my Tracking the Trenches series. So if you're interested in taking an inside look at offensive line, defensive line play, you know, I do a lot of statistical analysis and film analysis for the Bears pass rush and pass protection. So if you want to check that out on my Tracking the Trenches series, make sure to give that a look on the Bear Report. Again, that should be out by the time this podcast is up. So definitely check that out if you're interested in that type of contact. But, you know, without further ado, Bears fans, that's going to wrap it up for us here today for our podcast. You know, it was a tough weekend last week with, you know, that loss to the Packers. It's never great to lose on Packer week, but, you know, this week is a new week. It's a new game. It's a new opponent. And hopefully the Bears can come away with another win here to get out to an above 500 record here early in the season. But until the next time, Bears fans, have a great weekend, have a safe weekend, and bear down.